As we await tonight the starting of a White House press briefing from White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany, this is the headlines still reverberating all throughout Washington, D.C., as Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao has resigned. But we begin with new sound on from President-elect Joe Biden, who briefed the nation earlier today. Let's take a listen to what he had to say.
Yesterday, in my view, one of the darkest days in the history of our nation, unprecedented assault on our democracy.
On Capitol Hill, Senator Lindsey Graham has reversed his once praise for President Trump into staunch criticism following the violence at the U.S. Capitol yesterday. He was speaking with reporters, and we've got sound on now how he assesses President Trump's legacy.
It will be a major part of his presidency. It was a self-inflicted wound. It was going too far. When it comes to accountability, the president needs to understand that his actions were the problem, not the solution.
And the conversation continued on Bloomberg's airwaves, where the president's now former chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney, spoke to my colleague David Westin about how much responsibility President Trump shows and should bear for the events of yesterday. We've got sound on this. Here he is.
Certainly the people who did it are responsible for their own actions, but I think the president needs to do some introspection as to whether or not what he did yesterday contributed to it, what his family did, whether or not that contributed to it, whether what Don Jr. said about the party contributed to it. Part of me thinks that they don't think they have that real control over people. Part of me thinks they actually do have that much control over people.
Jeannie Zeno is an Iona College professor and a Bloomberg Politics contributor. Rick Davis is a partner at Stone Court Capital, former campaign manager for John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign, and a Bloomberg Politics contributor. Rick, I'll begin with you. We just heard from President Trump's former chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney. Right there, same question to you. How much responsibility does President Trump bear for what happened yesterday?
Yeah, I think it's President Trump and his entire family, as Mulvaney mentioned. They don't feel they have any accountability. I disagree with what he said, that they don't think they can actually influence anybody. These aren't just words shouted out in the dark. These are the constant patter of this family trying to stoke up the president's base, the people who showed up in the South Lawn of the White House yesterday, and were told to go to Capitol Hill and attack. And I would include Rudy Giuliani in that group. These are the people who are closest to the president, his family and his lawyer, and they had a concerted effort to whip up that crowd and send them up to the Capitol harm.
Let me follow up here. And no one that I've spoken to in my reporter's notebook in the past 24 hours and texting with sources, calling with sources, and talking to folks is excusing the mob that occurred yesterday and the horror, and that's the word for it, horror that occurred yesterday in the nation's capital. There's also, when I talk to Republicans, this sense of everything has to change. And you heard a little bit of this in Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer's critique of the media on the Senate floor, just a little bit of this, but that there is this sense of this is even bigger, as massive as the commander-in-chief moment is, that this is even bigger than that, that this is a reckoning moment for American politics, Rick, that doesn't give anyone a monopoly on how we got here.
That's right. And I think it is a moment of introspection. A lot of people on Wall Street, in Washington, around the world are looking into this and seeing how they can make it better. I would say, though, the outcome is not assured. Just because people like Lindsey Graham, you know, have now called the emperor has no clothes, it doesn't mean that anything is going to change. The president got on the phone this morning and talked to the winter meeting of the Republican National Committee that's going on in Florida right now, and got a standing ovation. These are the chairman and national committee people from each state that represents the Republican Party. Now, they've fashioned that into Trump's own image. Almost every one of those people are, you know, real Trump supporters and not what you would call establishment Republicans. But they didn't seem to think there was any problem. I mean, this is going to be a very long and difficult task of reconciling how we go forward in our politics, how we go forward on the internet. These are people who got whipped up through organizations like the Proud Boys and QAnon with conspiracy theories, and Facebook and Instagram and others have been culpable in that. And so I think there are a lot of organizations looking inward right now and saying, how do we improve, you know, what we do to ensure that this never happens again?
Jeannie Zeno, I'm reading from the New York Times report from Michael Schmidt and Maggie Haberman. Quote, the discussions occurred in recent weeks, and it was not clear whether he has brought it up since he incited supporters to march on the Capitol, where some stormed the site. But President Trump has suggested to aides he wants to pardon himself in the final days of his presidency, according to two people with knowledge of the discussions, a move that would mark one of the most extraordinary and untested uses of presidential power in American history. Jeannie, one of the things that you do so incredibly well as our Bloomberg contributor is to provide a professorial, for lack of a better word, look at the analysis of what that would mean from a constitutional perspective. So putting on that cap for us for a second, how unprecedented would that be?
It's entirely unprecedented. We've never seen an individual, a president, if you will, pardon themselves. And I am one of the people who, as I read, this is Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1, for anybody who wants to read it. But as you read it, the wording of it, if we are to be originalists, for lack of a better term, is he shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States. And the way I read that is for people charged with offenses against the United States. In other words, he has the power to grant that to somebody else, not to himself. Now, there are constitutional scholars and lawyers who disagree with that reading. As far as I know, we've never had an opportunity to hear the Supreme Court speak on that. So I would suspect that if he goes down this road and he grants himself a pardon, that may go to the Supreme Court at some point, and we will get a reading from them, which could be very different than my own. But I don't believe you can pardon yourself. And I also think we need to watch for him pardoning other people as well, particularly family members. Rick was just talking about the fact that Don Jr., for instance, was speaking to the crowd, and there's been, before the attack on the Capitol, and there's been a lot of discussion as to what Don Jr. said. And there is a school of thought that he may have incited the people to go to the Capitol, and that may be a crime. So if that is a crime and the president tries to pardon him or any other member of his family, prospectively, really, before they've been charged with anything, there's also a question as to whether you can pardon somebody before they've been charged with an offense. So I think both of those things are things we're going to have to watch for. And I read the piece you're talking about by Maggie Haberman and her colleague. And I do think that this is not a big surprise that we're hearing the president talk about this. And I would not be surprised in the coming days if he attempts this. This is an individual who is facing profound legal challenges and economic challenges when he leaves office. And I think we should understand that that has a huge part to do with why he's done what he's done the last 24, 48 hours. He has fundraised off of all of this since the election. Much of that money is money he could use not to challenge the election, but in other ways. So I think all of those things come into play here.
Jeannie Zeno is with us, Iona College professor and a Bloomberg Politics contributor, as is Rick Davis, who is a partner at Stonecourt Capital and the former campaign manager for John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign. We're anticipating within this half hour that White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany will be briefing reporters from the White House, and we'll bring you those headlines as we get them. But I do want to play for you what the Democrats are suggesting happens on Capitol Hill. Based upon my reporting, Republicans are not in agreement with this, not even Senator Lindsey Graham. But we've got sound on what Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi feels should be done with regards to the events following yesterday. Take a listen to Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi talking about the 25th Amendment.
The president has committed an unspeakable assault on our nation and our people. I join the Senate Democratic leader in calling on the Vice President to remove this president by immediately invoking the 25th Amendment. If the Vice President and the Cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
Rick Davis, you know Republicans in the party right now are skeptical that that would be an effective way to move the country forward so close to the inauguration. Are they right?
I think they are right. I think that the 25th Amendment was designed to remove President of the United States in his incapacity. It's a little open question that you could use the 25th Amendment if the president himself says that he won't leave. And so it's really amazing that this week has basically been a masterclass in constitutional law for the American people. And I think it's one of the most healthy things that have come out of this entire sordid event is that people have learned about how the electoral vote process works. People are learning about what these other governors are on the president, and I think that's healthy for our democracy.
Let's leave it right there for now. Coming up next, we're going to keep a careful eye on that White House press briefing, and I check in with the bipartisan group of lawmakers about fiscal stimulus hopes in the President-elect Biden's first 100 days. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg Radio.
My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. All eyes on the White House Brady briefing room at this hour, where White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany has just stepped to the podium to brief reporters. And she says, headlines crossing before my Bloomberg terminal, quote, McEnany says yesterday's violence was appalling. We will continue to carefully monitor that briefing and bring you the headlines and the news as it happens. I'm joined with Jeannie Zeno, Iona College professor and Bloomberg politics contributor, and Rick Davis, a partner at Stone Court Capital, former campaign manager for John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign, both of whom are Bloomberg politics contributors. I want to go back to the reaction from the greater Washington, D.C. area for and from the law enforcement community within the last 24 hours following the mob that descended upon the United States Capitol. And we've got sound on this reaction from Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican from Maryland, a centrist Republican from Maryland. And he spoke spoke with reporters earlier today and said that he himself didn't have the authority to call the National Guard into Washington, D.C., now that the federal government had that power. But notably, he said the president had that power. Take a listen to what he said.
Approximately an hour and a half later, I got a call on my cell phone from the Secretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy, who gave us the authority that we needed to be able to move into the city.
You hear that, and by the way, Governor Hogan's going to join me tomorrow on the program. But Rick, you hear that comment about how the Secretary of the Army is calling for help from the Maryland governor, and it really puts into perspective the intensity of what happened in downtown Washington, D.C. yesterday, Rick.
Yeah, it's really a stunning and shocking quote from the governor of one of the tri-state region in the national capital area. And it was echoed today by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and the comments she made about the lack of preparation and decision-making around protecting the Capitol and the members of Congress. You know, we always watch all these shows about the continuity of government and how much effort is put forth to create that kind of protection around our office holders. And yesterday, it just looked like amateur hour. And so I think you will see an entire investigation and lots of discussion about the region, our police forces, the military, the Capitol Hill Police. It's going to be quite an interesting discussion. And I think a lot of people, and I would say me included, want to have answers as to why the Capitol isn't better protected than it was yesterday.
And Jeannie Zeno, it's a conversation that you and I had yesterday, but we'll continue. To Rick's point, that the Capitol campus, I would argue, having the privilege of reporting in there and observing the proceedings and whatnot, it's a campus. It's a large workplace. And I keep using that word, the workplace, because there are restaurant workers, there are janitorial staff, there are parking officials, underground garages. It's really an intricate system of underground private subway systems, for example, and house and Senate office buildings, where I always make the comparison, these elected officials are really the CEOs of their own offices, and they have staffs sometimes upwards of more than 24 for the committees and whatnot. And so it's a large compound, and the security of it yesterday, there are serious questions to be raised for it, while also expressing the gratitude that I can tell you reporters and staffers across the ideological spectrum have for the Capitol Police Force, Jeannie.
Yeah, and you know, while this was going on, or just in the later hours, we had raised that question yesterday on the air. You know, post 9/11 in particular, there has been a concerted effort to secure government buildings in Washington, D.C., and of course across the country. And as somebody who's gone to the Capitol numerous times, you have, I have, I was astounded that they got in that easily, seemingly easily, particularly given the millions of dollars spent on security. And, you know, one thing I think is particularly troubling, and I agree with you, we owe a lot of gratitude to the Capitol Police, but you look at some of the pictures on TikTok and elsewhere where you see security seeming to allow protesters in the building. There were some taking pictures. Those kinds of things are troubling, and they raise something we haven't talked about yet, which was whether, in fact, if those protesters had been members of Black Lives Matter, there would have been a different response. That's one big question being asked in Congress and elsewhere about the response to what happened yesterday. And I think it's something that a commission or committee is going to have to investigate mm-hmm. and get to the bottom of. And, you know, we really have to take that seriously, whether issues of race played a role in this at all. That's one thing to investigate. And another thing to look at is why the perimeter wasn't better protected. Why, when there were 40 to 50,000 people in that demonstration, were they prepared for 20,000 is what we're hearing. So a lot of questions to be asked about security and why we weren't better prepared, or the government wasn't better prepared for what happened.
Two things. First and foremost, I can tell you I spoke with staffers today who told me that they fully anticipate that there will be congressional hearings on the security element of this. And secondly, that we are going to ask those questions to our next guest coming up in the next half hour, who are the chairman of the Bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus, Congressman Scott Heimer, as well as Congressman Reed. Much more to get through. Keep it right here. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio, and monitoring the headlines from a brief briefing from the White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany within the last 10 minutes. Headlines crossing the Bloomberg terminal, and we've got sound on her, a portion of her estimated 90-second statement. Take a listen to a key portion of it. Here she is.
Let me be clear. The violence we saw yesterday at our nation's capital was appalling, reprehensible, and antithetical to the American way. We condemn it, the president and this administration, in the strongest possible terms. It is unacceptable, and those that broke the law should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Joining me now are the co-chairs of the Problem Solvers Caucus, Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat representing New Jersey's 5th Congressional District, and Congressman Tom Reed, a Republican representing New York's 23rd Congressional District. Thank you both for being here. We're also joined by our contributors for Bloomberg, Rick Davis of Stonecourt Capital, and Jeannie Zeno, an Iona College political science professor. Congressman Gottheimer, I'll start with you. You just hear that statement from White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany. Do you believe that members of the administration should be prosecuted for what happened yesterday?
Well, I find that a little incredulous to believe that they were not encouraging the march and attack on the Capitol. But listen, what I'm focused on is the fact that after a very heart-wrenching day for the country yesterday, an attempt to overturn the outcome of an election and a failed insurrection, we ended at 3 o'clock in the morning by certifying the results of the election. There will be a peaceful transfer of power, as there has been for 230 years. Tom Reed, who is the Republican co-chair of the Problem Solvers Caucus, long may we went to the floor of the House last night and stood together and said America must come first above this partisan rancor. And I'm hoping that after all of this is done, that we can unite as a country and put this all behind us.
Congressman Reed, I mean, to that point, what do you say to skeptical Americans who are saying, why will this time be any different? As horrific as the images were and the actions were yesterday, why should Americans have faith that this time it can be different?
Well, first of all, Kevin, thanks for having us on. And I can't be prouder to be here with Josh to send this message and also to demonstrate that it can be done. Because like what we've done in the Problem Solvers Caucus, like right before the horrific events of yesterday, you know, we worked together to get the COVID-19 stimulus package done. And it was our work working with our partners in the Senate to get signed into law, $900 billion worth of assistance that was so desperately needed now. So I would offer to those folks the vision of what we've accomplished in the Problem Solvers Caucus to say we know how to do it, and we're 50 strong now in the existing Congress, or last Congress, and we're going to be 50-plus stronger going into this Congress. And I guess I got to tell you, these are the members that are going to get it done, and I can tell you, when we went to the floor last night, Josh and I, we were so disheartened. We were so upset by what we saw. But after we were done and we completed democracy and delivered for the American people that we will have a transition of power in a peaceful way and the mob was not going to be successful, we offered, I think, a vision of hope. And I can tell you, I've heard all day today that people were so disheartened yesterday. But today they woke up with a little bit more courage and a little bit more hope that things are going to be different because of what we in the Problem Solvers Caucus have done and have laid out as a vision for how we're going to do it. Proud Republicans, proud Democrats, working together to get things done for the American people.
And Representative Gottheimer, this is Jeannie Zano from your neighboring state of New York. And how are you? I'm glad that you and obviously Representative Reed from my home state are both well, and your staff after yesterday. But you had just been saying in response to Kevin that you know, it's important that as Americans, America comes first and we overcome this partisan rancor. And I think we all agree with that. And sentiment, and you know, obviously the work you're doing with the Problem Solvers Caucus is more needed than ever, I would say today. But my question is, I look at a lot of the work that you're doing. Are you going to be able to achieve that in the absence of more structural reforms, things like resolving gerrymandering and those kinds of issues? Can you come together when we still, for instance, have districts that are gerrymandered across this country, which feeds into this sort of partisan rancor? And that's just one example of those types of structural issues we see at play.
It's a really good question. You know, listen, there are certainly many factors that have contributed to the division that we've seen in our country, not just over the last 4 years, but beyond. And you add social media to that and cable news, and obviously you have very constructive conversation here, but usually things are dictated by sound bites, and as a result, there's very little reward for what, you know, my really dear friend Tom and I do every week, which is
policy.
To actually come together with a group of 58 now. We're growing in this Congress. We've added more members to the Problem Solvers Caucus. And what we're focused on is actually solving problems and governing. And, you know, who likes to talk about that these days, you know, actually getting something done? But as Tom brought up before, we were able to, working together with our colleagues, not just in the House, but in the Senate, Democrats and Republicans, help get a $900 billion emergency pandemic relief package done and help get that out the door. It wouldn't have happened without our bipartisan bicameral work. And I'm hopeful that as we head into a new Congress here with, as you know, very narrowly divided bodies, you know, 4 to 5 seats in the House, tied in the Senate, it's going to mean that we're going to have to work together up front on these policies to get things done. But, you know, despite what happened yesterday, which was obviously a failed insurrection, an attempt to thwart a peaceful transition of power that we always celebrate in our country, despite that, we now, and what Tom and I were just talking about this today, we got to focus on the issues that are affecting so many Americans. You know, the COVID continues to ravage our country, right? You've got an economy in Jersey, we've got 10.2% unemployment, an economy that needs to be rebuilt. You've got issues like infrastructure that are that need to be addressed. There's so many issues. We must come together.
And we're going to talk about those issues. Yeah, we're going to talk about those issues coming up. I got to go to a break real quick, but the congressmen are going to stay with us. Much more coming up next in this interview. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio, joined by the two Bloomberg political contributors, Rick Davis of Stonecourt Capital, former campaign manager to John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign, Professor Jeannie Zeno of Iona College, another Bloomberg political contributor. You know, I was thinking when I talked to my dad earlier, just about how we used to watch Emeril Lagasse. Remember him? Bam! Got to pick up the cadence. And the two guests that we have on for our final block, Congressman Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat representing New Jersey's 5th Congressional District, and Tom Reed, a Republican representing New York's 23rd Congressional District. They're the co-chairs of the Bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus. Bam! Congressman Gottheimer, I remember interviewing you, you probably don't even remember this, in the hallway outside of the financial services room, and you would always tell me, you go so fast in these interviews. And I thought, well, you guys can keep up. You guys can keep up. So quickly, I want to get a 1-2 from both of you. Are centrists emboldened in the new Congress, Congressman Gottheimer?
Yes. I mean, I believe, as I said earlier, the only way we're going to get anything done in this new Congress is if we work together, and that will come from Democrats and Republicans that tend to be willing to gravitate toward the middle. Reasonable, common sense solutions.
Congressman Reed, are centrists emboldened?
Absolutely. And also remember, you know, we are a group that when we get to 75% consensus, we vote as a block. So when you have 56 members of Congress that are equally divided that will vote as a block, you bring 56 members of Congress to the floor united in an effort, you can influence the process of Congress, and most importantly, you can influence the policy. And people want things to get done. Yes.
See, Rick Davis, I find this fascinating, hearing them say that the centrists are emboldened, because maybe this is this, Rick Davis, the biggest contrast from what we saw back in 2008 when we saw the rise of the Tea Party, but no centrist counter.
No, I think this is a huge development, and I think the changes in the Senate leadership is going to also help the House centrists, because now that platform that you two have created, Congressman Reed and Congressman Gottheimer, are going to receive very top priorities when it gets to the United States Senate. And people like your colleague Joe Manchin, Senator centrist Susan Collins, who worked together with all of you on this latest COVID breakthrough, the stimulus bill, they'll all be much more powerful than they were just a few months ago. So I really have great expectations for a lot of legislative activity that can help, especially this area of COVID. And that was my question. And maybe Congressman Reed, you can tackle this. Have there been conversations with the Biden team about what that first package of COVID relief is going to look like? Obviously, you chipped away at it a little bit before the end of the year, but I got to assume that the markets are reacting to more stimulus coming. And maybe you could give us a little look inside of what that might be.
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously looking forward to developing that relationship with the Biden administration and working with Joe Biden on our advanced manufacturing bill that I did with Joe Kennedy years ago. There's an existing relationship already there. And so when you talk about COVID-19, we have to take on the issue of liability reform and state and local aid. And we in the bipartisan bicameral group that we did with our 8 Senate partners that work with us in this Problem Solvers Caucus, you know, we laid the groundwork. We have legislative text that moved the ball. Working with folks in the caucus, we came to an agreement and bipartisan approval that we could do with Joe Manchin and others. And so I think that will form the framework of the next package. And on top of that, I think we're going to need some additional fiscal stimulus. And so I would keep your eyes open on an infrastructure package. And when the Biden administration has indicated a willingness to take that on, and shame on us in a Republican administration last cycle, we probably should have led with infrastructure rather than taking on health care. And I would encourage the Biden administration, there's many of us on the Republican side looking for a win, and infrastructure is that common ground point, policy issue that can bring people together.
Rick and Jeannie the other day were educating me on the importance of the gangs, so to speak, and of yesteryear in the halls of Congress. And as we know, and as I've reported on from Congressman Gottheimer and from Congressman Reed, economics is such a crucial component of the Problem Solvers Caucus. But Congressman Gottheimer, I got to be candid here. What about national security? What about U.S.-China relations? Are you able to form a consensus around many of these issues that you both know, Congressman Gottheimer, are actually pretty nonpartisan from a foreign policy standpoint, especially with China?
Well, you know, on China last year, we were very involved in Tom's on Ways and Means. And as a Problem Solvers Caucus, we dug into USMCA and the trade agreement. We were very involved in U.S.-Israel and making sure there weren't any new conditions put on aid to that vital American ally. So, yes, expect us to get involved in national security issues when they arise, when we supported the president after he killed Soleimani for the Iranian actions, you know, supporting terror in the region. So we've been involved over time. You know, what matters to us is building consensus, is finding solutions to challenges where we can get 75% of us agreeing, and then working together as a bloc to get things done, to governing, and to putting country first. And that's been our approach as a caucus, instead of insisting on all or nothing, which, as you know, has led to obstructionism and prevented progress on so many things, whether, as Tom was talking about, infrastructure, or COVID, or immigration reform, you name it. There are many things I believe if we work together in a smart way, we can get done.
And Representative Reed, did you see yesterday as a turning point of sorts? Do you have sort of faith or belief that when you all are back now, that we are going to see Congress working together in a different way? I mean, I guess to so many of us on the outside, yesterday felt like something of a turning point. But is that how it feels for you on the inside?
I truly do believe that. I think there was a moment last night on the floor of the House, and you saw it with the Senate and many of us that went to our colleagues and said, enough. Enough of the political grandstanding. And as I looked at my colleagues when we were voting on the electors, I said, you know, I know many of them, and many of the senators I talked to, they said, well, I have to do this for political purposes. But after the events of yesterday, and as I asked them to search their conscience and their soul, and I know many of them did during that horrific day, and sitting in their offices watching this unfold firsthand or on the chamber ground, on the chamber floor, they then came to the floor and said, you know what, we need to move on, close this down. No more political grandstanding. And what we're doing in the Problem Solvers Caucus inspires so many members that came up to me last night saying, we want to work with you and get things done. And that's what it's all about, because we as members of Congress are also human beings. We went to Congress because we want to get things done. We sacrificed so much to be there. We're sick and tired of the political grandstanding, just like the American people are.
Headlines crossing the Bloomberg terminal right now as we're monitoring this. Senator Kelly Loeffler has conceded her race in Georgia. She has officially conceded to Raphael Warnock. No surprise there, as that race had been called, but still a major development. And to that, to Congressman Reed's point, Rick Davis, come in here. I mean, Senator Loeffler was one of the lawmakers last night who was going to file the objection to one of the swing state and ultimately said no.
Yeah, it was pretty clear that she had some election day pandering the week before the election in Georgia, where she came out abruptly right before the president came to Georgia for a campaign rally on her behalf and endorsed this idea of protesting the electoral vote count. It wasn't a heartfelt commitment, I'm pretty sure, on her part. I think she was just gaming the political system. And I think last night taught everybody that we got to quit gaming the system and start standing up on values.
To that point, Congressman Gottheimer, what Rick Davis just said, my question to you, sir, is, okay, well, what role does big tech play in all of this? And how are there more regulations where there's a consensus in terms of what needs to be done to guide some of that smoothly?
Well, as you know, around tech in particular, we've seen so much in the last year and so much disagreement, and they've been involved in the elections. There's talk about, from corners of both parties about 230 and more regulation on tech. And I think this is going to be a very big issue, frankly, in the first month of Congress that's talked about. And, you know, what, and there's antitrust questions that have been swirled around, and we'll see what the Justice Department suggests on that front. But I think you're going to see committees in the House and the Senate address all these issues on the tech front. There's a lot of questions that want answers, and it's become a very populist issue. So, you know, and I know tech is going to want more certainty, and that's been something that they've lacked. So expect that to be a major issue in the coming months on many fronts.
All right, Congressman Tom Reed, final word to you, sir, in terms of where the path forward goes for the Republican Party. I mean, it's do you think how much power does President Trump have over the Republican Party?
Well, I think we're going to stand on our own, and we're going to move from the administration of President Trump into that next phase. And I'll tell you, it's being on Ways and Means, for example, we're going to unleash the tax code and empower innovation and create a competitive tax code and fight those that want to burden our tax code coming into it, the Democratic majorities, and say, you know what, don't saddle America's economy now, unleash it. This is the time to prosper, not the time to take a step back.
All right, my thanks to both of you.
I agree with that.
Well, there it is. There you heard it right there. Come back and talk about salt later on. Congressman Josh Gottheimer, a Democrat from New Jersey's 5th Congressional District, and Congressman Tom Reed, a Republican from New York's 23rd Congressional District, the co-chairs of the bipartisan Problem Solvers Caucus. My thanks to the team, Jeannie Zeno, as well as Rick Davis. I'm Kevin Cirilli. Tomorrow, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and Maryland Governor Larry Hogan. This is Bloomberg.